So can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Now, if you don't have questions, I've got a few.
Anybody have any questions? Oh, that is not fair.
Okay. All right. Should we come back to you later?
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, sir. That was wonderful. Would you like to comment on the adequacy of resources that entrepreneurs have available? I mean, you talked about keeping the ingenuity, but we also have this idea of the smell of an oily rag. And it's one of them.
What?
Oily rag.
The smell of an oily rag. Is that a good thing or not?
We'd love you to comment on that, please. To what extent should you set off as an entrepreneur with all of these attributes that you've talked about? Do you really need to round up the resources ahead of time, or do you think we can wing it?
Okay. Did everybody get the question? Not knowing exactly, but the smell, I know what an oily rag smells like. What I don't know is whether that's... that's all of your fuel. Oh, that's all of your fuel is what you can wring out of an oily rag. That's
your engine will run off the shell of an oily
rag. I got it. Okay. Sorry for the language gap here. To be blunt, I mean, it is what it is, right? So here we are. We're in, and it's pretty crappy for pretty much all entrepreneurs globally, even guys sitting, within spitting distance of Sand Hill Road, which is the venture capital ghetto in Silicon Valley. It's really hard to raise money. But having said that, I have not met an entrepreneur who isn't aware that the resources available to that entrepreneur, to him or her, are virtually infinite in terms of building a successful company. I mean, and so... It doesn't necessarily mean that a venture capital fund will write you a check, but it does mean that if you've got a brilliant opportunity, there are 5-10 people in this audience who presumably will say, hey, I think I got something pretty good, but boy, if this is really brilliant, forget that, I'll throw all that over and I'll work nights and weekends on your idea. If you're good enough, and if any entrepreneur is good enough at articulating the vision and the opportunity of what they're doing, then they will get other people to just throw off what they're doing and join them. Now, they may not quit their day jobs, and they may not write a check, and there's, you got to be realistic. But we see team after team after team that figures out a way somehow to scrap their way to putting a company together. And so... you can wish that the government would provide some pot of money, or you could wish that some rich people would loosen their bank accounts, and you can wish for all these things. But, and it may happen, but probably not. It's not a strategy. So, as an entrepreneur, it's your obligation, even if venture capital is available to you, it's your obligation to find whatever resources you can on whatever terms you can to get your thing going. And again, generally that means you got to go to the customers. I mean, and whether or not there's venture capital available, whether or not there are angels willing to invest, you got to go to the customers. You got to go to the customers, even if you've got nothing more than vapor. And speaking of the smell of an oily rag, and spin them a story that says that you're going to save them a huge pot of money, or you're going to make them a pot of money. And either they say, yeah, I've heard that before. Or they say, wow, that's interesting. Let's talk more. And until you get a customer saying, let's talk more, then, maybe you haven't got it figured out. Maybe it's not a matter of lack of resources. Maybe it's just not a great idea. But.
Yeah, go on.
Down the back there was another question.
That's, see, it's mine too. Anyway, yeah, okay, all right. What the heck? Give the mic to Nicholas. Any other questions back there? Okay.
You kind of answered it in a way, but I have some sort of regular idea. I didn't really have any team of work to do, which I kind of said before we did it.
Well, again, I mean, we get this question all the time. We get to, how can I possibly get my company started without money, because I don't have any money to hire people, or I don't have any money to buy this widget or whatever it is. And then, you know, through the other door walks in a team of, you know, five guys. None of them will tell us their last names because they're currently working at Google. And, you know, they don't want it getting back or whatever, right? And they are getting together over the weekend to hack some stuff together. I mean, I'm kind of worried about IP and all that, but, you know, all of that aside, the teams that get off the ground with zero money. And, you know, the teams that come together as teams, if you have to pay someone to be a teammate, then there's something wrong with that equation. Now, reality is there's some people who can't quit their day jobs, and there's some people who, you know, they actually need money, and, you know, I can be very sympathetic to that concept, but that doesn't mean they can't make a contribution in the interim, and that doesn't mean that you can't figure out some trick to use university. I mean, university students are God's gift to entrepreneurs because they don't really want to do their classwork anyway, right? And, you know, they think what they might do for you is way more relevant. And so as far as they're concerned, you know, they pay you. I mean, hell, they're paying the university. Why not, you know, for the learning experience?
Sorry, Nick, see what's hit now.
Yeah, I've got... It's kind of two questions. Number one, I work with a number of people who are under 20 years of age. They don't expect to pay for anything. I don't care what it is. If it's not free, they're not interested. And the second point is that if you take Twitter, for instance, it's a great product. It's used by everybody, but it actually has no monetary value. Mm-hmm. So we've got a group of people who don't expect to pay for anything coming as the next generation,
mm-hmm.
and they want to get something that really has no value to anybody else. I mean, I presume the database is the only thing that Twitter's ever going to be able to sell.
No.
So at the end of the day, you've got one of the most successful entrepreneurial online businesses, worth nothing, used by people who don't want to pay anything.
Well, this discussion comes up all the time. You know, the issue of Twitter we'll put aside for now. But the specific discussion of this next generation. And this is, you know, this is one of the great fallacies of the next generation. Because the generation that's coming up right now is spending way more on technology than we ever did when we were young. I mean, if you think about what they're spending on their cell phones, what they're spending on their internet connections, you know, what maybe their parents are paying for it, the way our parents paid for some of our stuff. But in fact, even though they want all of this stuff, quote unquote, for free, they're spending boatloads of money on new technologies. I mean, if you just look at what my son pulled out of his savings to buy a better computer, I said, look, you know, the computer you got is perfectly adequate. You can live with this computer. And he said, no, Dad, you know, I've got some savings. I'll put some of my own money into a newer computer. Now, I mean, I don't know how unique my kid is, but the reality is if you in fact, and you know, you take out, if you exclude these exceptions like a Twitter or a Facebook or whatever, and you actually look at the spending patterns of this next generation, they're spending a lot of money on technology. It's just they have this funny expectation about content being free, but they don't expect their laptop to be free. They don't expect the internet connection to be free. They don't expect their cell phone to be free. They don't expect their texting to be free. I mean, all that is real money that they spend, that it's going to lots of companies making big pots of money.
Yeah, but they're not startup companies.
They're not startup companies. But I mean, they were. I mean, in terms of the money flows through. Right, I mean, Apple is enabling a lot of startup companies off of this platform because kids and adults want to buy incremental stuff, right? And so those are startup companies. Now, would I fund one of them? No, I just don't think, you know, that I don't think an iPhone app company is the right company for a VC to fund. But you can start one in your garage. You can start one in your, you know, den on weekends. So there are lots of, and you can get, in, you know, there are literally scores, if not hundreds of stories of you know, two students in a dorm room launching an iPhone app company and, you know, making $20,000 a month. I mean, not bad. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, huge, But it's real money, and it's real companies, and it's real technology, and maybe this will enable them to develop something that's truly useful, you know, on top of that. Right? So, and yeah, don't get me started on Twitter. That's a whole other.
Well, so we do. We'll just grab the first one here, and then you are next. So,
check. Are you around after this? I'm just going to ask you a couple of focus questions.
Yes.
Are you around? Going to be here afterwards?
Yeah, I'll be hanging around a little bit. And I'll also be up at the Morgo conference in Waitangi, if you're going to be up at the Morgo conference. Anybody here going to the Morgo conference? Mm-hmm. Nobody? One? Okay.
Sorry, we can keep all right. Talking afterwards. Sorry, just... Hold on, I can walk through here.
But sure? Yeah, but to that question again, if for whatever reason we don't connect, you got my email. Feel free to send me a question on email. Okay, question.
I just wanted to know, you keep talking about linking drivers and knowing people. That seems like Twitter and stuff. When you say that they've actually got no conceptual value in the company, but they must bring in resources through alternative means, such as advertising or things like that, to actually provide the software base.
Well, I didn't say Twitter was worthless. In terms of the, you mean the theory behind Twitter, behind, you know, my good friends actually writing multi-million-dollar checks to fund their operations, which I will admit is slightly insane from my point of view. I'm not saying Twitter is worthless, but I'm concerned about... The main reason I'm concerned about Twitter is because I think it sends the wrong message to entrepreneurs. I don't care what message it sends to kids or whoever uses it, but it sends the wrong message to entrepreneurs. It sends a message to entrepreneurs that, you know, I put something up over the weekend, I get a few million eyeballs, and it must be worth $500 million. And so I think it's driving a misallocation of resources in the entrepreneurial community. So that's my big anxiety, complaint, concern about Twitter. Not that it's worthless, and to get into the theoretical discussion of why somebody thinks that it might be acquired for $2 billion, well, you know, it's, you can make the argument that the brand value of bringing a clump of, you know, some number of tens of millions of people into some other entity, that it can be monetized. So, but that's, you know, and one of the investors came up with a list of 32 business models for Twitter to make, a lot of money. And there are ways maybe that they'll make money. And we'll all kind of look back, you know, every VC who is kind of looking cross-eyed at Twitter is afraid to say anything out loud because they know, you know, it's possible in 12 or 18 months that Twitter figures out some brilliant monetization model and they've got something on their blog that says, you know, they were an idiot, right? So that's why Twitter is a very hot topic, and particularly in Silicon Valley. My point to most entrepreneurs is just fine, let it be. Focus on something you can do that will truly create value. Don't try to chase Twitter.
No more Twitter questions?
I just have one little comment. Do you believe that the overemphasis on the value of content in terms of monetary value that's occurred over the last 20 years is basically bottoming out at the moment? And this is one of the reasons why venture capitalists are kind of... The idea that content is worth a lot more than it actually is suddenly sort of bottoming out. And this is the thing with Twitter, is that Twitter costs nothing to run. It's been services that have been basically providing what Twitter's been providing, that haven't been so kind of in your face as Twitter has been. People like yourself are now suddenly realizing that the value of the content that you've been pouring millions of dollars into over the last 20 years isn't quite as worth as much. It's not so much the content, it's the brand. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, again, this is something of a theoretical discussion in terms of this whole thing. You know, broadly speaking, though, I will say we as Garage have generally stayed away from content. So for some of the reasons that we've been talking about, which is that it's frequently very hard to monetize content and it's hard to make a profit on content companies. There have been, it's a very, very low hit rate. And now, there are some very big wins. You know, Facebook and Twitter seem like they're going to be very big wins. But for, you know, in spite of those few big wins, there are hundreds and hundreds of companies in the content space that are not going to make money. So we, as a small fund, have decided, in general, it's a space we're not going to play in. So the larger issue of content, I mean, you know, if again, it's not that it's worthless, it's that the value in the monetization is shifting. And so it's, you know, if you look at the amounts at the content economy over the last 20 years or 30 years, I mean, you went from free television to cable paid subscribed television. You know, we sort of went the wrong direction. We went from free to paid, which was, you know, an interesting shift in our economy. You know, and then increasingly you saw this fight between free content and subscriber content in print and then online. And now at the end of the day, if you add up all the dollars that are made online through content, it's a lot of money. I mean, because especially if you throw in Google. Google makes a lot of money on content. Now they make it through advertising, right? But so you can make, clearly people make a lot of money on content, and clearly that number has gone up over time. So it's misleading to think that the value of content is deteriorating. It's just the number of people who can monetize it is very few. So that's, again, more theory than perhaps you guys wanted.
No, we've only got time for two more questions, so I suggest that those of you with questions approach Bill afterwards because he's very approachable. Now we've got one on the front already, which I've got your tag. And just on the back there, you. No more? Okay, so 1, 2, 3, hands up. There you go. Okay, do you need the microphone or you're right without it?
No, it's okay. Yeah, I'll be in New Zealand in the back. Well, I flew over from Spain yesterday. I own an IT company over in Spain. And I think one of your points is regarding the leaders of the entrepreneurship. Now, a lot of people will probably feel that, oh God, you know, I'm now going to lose out. I don't have that team. But I think there are still as many entrepreneurs who are making it on their own and receiving venture capital without a team behind them. A very good friend of mine, Rod Johnson, has Spring. So he went from Interface 21 to Spring Source. And this company was built on open source software, but their business model is really based around consulting and training. So they take the model that provides free software, make their business from the training consulting side. So I think there is still available market share for individual entrepreneurs.
For individual founders. I wouldn't fight this particular battle other than to say, because certainly throughout the course of history and even the last 20 years, most successful companies, broadly defined, were started by sole proprietor individual founders. But very few of those became big companies. Now, I mean, and in fact, I can't think of one. Now, I know a lot of guys who started their own companies and became multi-million-dollar companies and made a lot of money doing that, and you can do that. But if you want to build a big company, just my own bias is, and I think most VCs' bias is, if you can't walk in the door having already convinced two or three other people to be passionately committed to it, I don't know that you're going to be able to build a company that's successful, that you're going to be able to make other people passionate about it, and that you have the instinct and or the inclination to want to hand over your company to other people. Because inevitably, you know, as Paul Allen did to Bill Gates, and Bill Gates did to Steve Ballmer, and you know, all, throughout the history of all great companies, you have seen the founders hand over, you know, as Larry and Sergey did to Eric Schmidt. The founders hand over their companies to other people that they have brought in, that they've grown to trust, and that's the way companies get big. If it's a sole proprietor, you know, there are some Donald Trumps out there. I don't know the story of Donald Trump well enough. But I gotta believe he's got a bunch of drones that you know you know, work for him in maybe under slave wages, I don't know. But it's really hard for an investor to get excited about a lone entrepreneur who, you know, hasn't shown both the inclination and the ability to build out a team. That's kind of the point there. But you could certainly build a very nice multi-million dollar company by yourself. I wouldn't fight that battle.
Right, thank you. Now this is the last question, and you've only got 1 minute to ask it, and 1 minute to answer it.
Yeah, fine.
Our services, the new product?
Our services, the new product. Great question. Yeah, I mean, if you know, in terms of increasingly, and the easiest answer to that is just software as a service. And so when we as venture capitalists look at scalability, the old definition of services, i.e. labor-based, was generally excluded from venture capital because it's very hard to scale labor-based services, right? But what we've done in the last period of time is we've figured out a way to deliver services in a scalable fashion using technology rather than labor to scale them. And so I don't know if that gets to the heart of your question, but if you look at business models that are being funded these days, increasingly the fundamental business model is delivering a service, i.e. a capability over the web or over the internet, as in software as a service, and charging for it on a per use or a per period of time basis, as opposed to selling stuff and taking a big chunk of software and saying, I'll give you this if you give me $200,000. And so in that sense, yes, services is a very important part of the future. But I know I've run way too long, and again, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'd love to talk with you all and learn more from you about what's going on here. And certainly you can communicate to me, and I'll hang around a little bit because we've got a couple of other great speakers who have even more interesting things to tell you. So
thank you very much.
Okay.
So, again,